Welcome to A World of Fragile Truths. This is a podcast by the knowledge platform Security and Rule of Law, where assumptions driving current security and rule of law policies and practices are being put to the test. Every episode, new evidence is put to the table and unpacked by colleagues from at least two different parts within the sector: researchers, policymakers, and practitioners. We've gathered your feedback on the first three pilot episodes and shifted the format a bit for more dynamic conversations and bigger variety of voices. My name is Christian Kuitert, and I'm happy to share that today we have Radboud University researcher Nora Stel here and Rabia Shibli, who is the director of the Center for Civic Engagement and Community Service at the American University of Beirut. They talk about refugee governance in Lebanon. Nora Stel's recent book, Hybrid Political Order and the Politics of Uncertainty, sets out some thought-provoking questions like, why are Lebanese refugees' policies so inconsistent, and what does that mean for a refugee, and what policies could improve that position? So, Nora and Rabia, welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you, Christian.
Yeah, would you mind introducing yourselves very briefly to our listeners, Rabia?
I'm director of a Center of Civic Engagement, as you mentioned, in the American University of Beirut. I've been working with the center, have been heavily engaged in the direct response on the Syrian refugee crisis since October 2012. So that's why I'm here, and it's an honor also to discuss the Syrian refugees governance ordeal that we're facing in Lebanon with Noura, having had her great work on this topic.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you here, and your combination of both the academic and more the practice side of it. So welcome. And Noura, what about you?
Yeah, thanks for having me today. I'm assistant professor in conflict studies at Radboud University at the Center for International Conflict Analysis and Management, SICAM, where I do research on governance of forced displacement in conflict-affected settings, specifically in Lebanon. And as you mentioned, I recently wrote a book on that, on the governance of and by Palestinian and Syrian refugee communities, where sort of through my inductive fieldwork, I started to focus on the disciplinary effects of not governing refugees. In the Lebanese context, is often called no policy policy or formal informality. And it's really exciting to have the chance to discuss this with Rabia, who's actually experienced a lot of that, not just kind of as a researcher asking questions, but as someone working in that context. So probably understanding it much better. Yeah.
Sure, and happy to discuss that too. And why should we discuss it right now? Is it very urgent?
Well, I think in general, we should definitely discuss research on refugees hosted in what's often called the region, right? In the countries neighboring the conflict settings that people flee from. Because in Europe, we tend to sort of do the navel staring on why we don't want refugees or what we can do to keep them away. But of course, most refugees are not actually in Europe. They're in when we talk about a Syrian refugee crisis, they're in the Middle East, in Lebanon, Turkey, Jordan. And that's no coincidence, right? That's for a large part due to European policies of outsourcing and externalization, shelter and perspective in the region, if you want to put it more benignly. And we've seen this with the Syrian refugee crisis that we're going to discuss today, but we've also see it now with the Afghan refugee crisis that is happening. Containment in the region is always the priority for European policymakers, but we don't often appreciate, I think, what that really looks like beyond the statistics. And I think empirical work on historical contextualization, on the ground, informal realities of what refugee lives look like and what the situation is for people trying to work with them and for them. Well, that's as relevant as ever, I would say.
And Rabia, you work in Lebanon every day on these topics. Are the topics from Nora's book also constantly discussed by the people in your network?
Yeah, for sure. What the main problems facing the refugees and the Lebanese? One, you have the situation on this governance did not change. It's going from bad to worse. which Noura describes as a no policy, or the non-recognition of the refugee status. That's one. The second is that Lebanon now is under a major collapse. It's been described as the worst, maybe, economic meltdown in the last century. And third, you have the international community who has taken a decision since the Beirut port explosion of last year to kind of implement a parallel infrastructure whereby they avoid the state institutions when it comes to supporting the underserved Lebanese or the refugees.
And are these challenges that Rabia describes in the governance, unchanging governance, so no policy, and the collapse, economic collapse, etc., are these the key challenges that you also identify, Noura, in your book?
Yeah, so when we study governance in any domain or sector, or whatever, we have a tendency to look at decisions, right? What is said, what is done, what is regulated, laws, decrees, policies. But power also operates through what is not done, what is not said, what is not regulated, which decisions are not made. So what I argue in the book is that we need to much more explicitly look for the silences and the absences in the governance of refugee crises. And I think this is something that resonates intuitively. Many people agree with this, and we know it from the literature, right? Informality matters. But it's still quite under-theorized and understudied. And I think we really need to understand that marginalization of particular groups, of vulnerable groups, in this case refugees, it's not just repression, it's also neglect, refusing registration, withholding refugee and residency status, disengaging from communal and political refugee representatives, refusing to organize shelter in a centralized, concerted way. I totally agree with Rabia that this matters not just for refugees. I think why I study refugee governance is because it's often a window on governance in a country more broadly, right? It's an extreme case study, but it tells us a lot about what's going on more generically. With the Beirut blast, it was striking to see that the Human Rights Watch report that came out a year after the explosion really emphasized this, that the maximizing of opacity, and this is a citation, of governance in the harbor area where the explosives were stalled, and then later the criminal neglect by politicians who knew of the danger of storing in there, that these forms of inaction, that these forms of ambiguity were central to why that disaster could happen. For me, a key lesson is that new perspective that's relevant not just to refugees, but more broadly.
That's a really interesting angle to look at that, actually the non-action and what is not being said, also more difficult, I can imagine, to research.
Definitely.
Rabia, what are your experiences with this policy of no policy, or are there other things that in Noura's story that struck you most?
Yeah, I'll go back to Lebanon is not a signatory of the Geneva Convention. Syrian refugees in Lebanon as regarded as, they use the term as de facto refugees. This is part of the policy of no recognition, because Lebanon's previous experience with refugees has been part of inflaming a civil war. And as also you might know that Lebanon is a very fragile composition of small sectarian groups. Our constitution has built on emphasizing and reinforcing the sectarian / religious affiliation over a national affiliation. The notion of citizenship is very shallow, whereby you have the individual's affiliation to their religious and sectarian identity is much more powerful. So imagine what happened when you have more than 1 million plus of Syrian refugees coming to a country undergoing major tensions, major polarization, all sorts of bickering on a daily basis, and this quarter of its population is of one sectarian or religious identity, that is Sunnis. So that adds to the tension, that adds to an anxiety across Lebanon, which is also reflected on having increasing, fueling anti-Syrian discrimination among the political readers and among a very wide spectrum of the Lebanese population, honestly.
And could we maybe, before we take a short break, Nora, hear from you then, what does that mean for an individual refugee, this polarization, these non-policies? What does that mean for a trajectory that a refugee is going through?
Yeah, basically, two things. Confusion. It's entirely unclear what people's rights are, where they turn to, who is responsible for what, where they can knock on, if they need anything, who speaks for them, who represents them, where to go. All of that, there's a lot of confusion. And that's, of course, frustrating. So that's, I would say, a second component of that. This notion of uncertainty has been broadly recognized. This is a key feature of refugee life, right? It's part of the game. But what I've tried to do is trace a bit more what are the politics behind that uncertainty. A key effect of this individual confusion and uncertainty and frustration is also that there's a lack of collective organization, of collective mobilization, because people are basically fragmented, spend all their time in just trying to survive and figuring out what's allowed, where they can go. There is very little form of communal and political organization, which would be necessary, I would say, to combat a lot of the shared predicaments of Syrian refugees in Lebanon. Some refugees themselves also perceive this as a disciplinary strategy. And one of the Palestinian activists that I spoke with about how Palestinian refugee camps are organized and governed, he said, and if I hope I can cite this, he says, the situation here is totally clouded and unclear, and it's meant to be cloudy. We are not supposed to understand. And this was a sentiment that I heard from many others, that refugees didn't just see this as inevitable contingency. They felt, no, we are deliberately subjected to this sort of regime of uncertainty to prevent us from organizing for a better life.
I think that's a really important part of it indeed. I'll also ask this question to you, Rabia. How do you see that affecting the people that you work with? You work on a lot of programs with refugees, correct? So how do they experience this?
On a very pragmatic level, what I've been trying to do is within the mandate of the center that I direct and within the quick response projects that I'm part of and I'm leading on is trying to better their life when it comes to education, maybe healthcare and livelihood. And it's been remarkable what they've done over the years in order to self-empower themselves and understand the complex Lebanese landscape and basically to take a decision to go off the radar. They very well understand the Lebanese landscape, so they learned how to maneuver in this gray area, and they've been doing it in a very good way. So when Noura talks about empowerment and political organization, I think, and refugees themselves, I think they believe that in a context like Lebanon, this did fire back when it's been tried in various spots across the country.
Well, let's discuss a bit more after the break how you guys think this could play out, and maybe you also have some questions for each other, of course, and let's see what kind of solutions we, of course, also have here on the digital table. Maybe am I being too ambitious? Let's take a quick break, where our listeners will tell us what they regard a fragile truth in the security and rule of law sector. Then let's hear more about that.
I think an important fragile truth in my own work is the assumption that land tenure registration will contribute to more tenure security and eventually peace, also in conflict-affected settings. And my own experience is that it's far more complex than that.
To discuss security with communities is a very challenging thing. Usually security is only discussed by people in suits and uniforms. So to discuss these issues and performance of security actors with civilians is very challenging. initially they might lack some knowledge, but people really, really want to discuss these issues because they affect their everyday life.
Thank you, listeners, for sending your fragile truths. Let's get back to the conversation here with Noora and Rabia.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to what Rabia, the point he just made about also refugee agency in this. I'm still of the opinion that most of the time this strategic ambiguity in policy, in status, in encampment, in many domains of life, works to the detriment of refugees. But it doesn't mean that they can't do that. And I've seen this also with Palestinian refugee communities living in informal settlements, so refugee camps that are neither recognized by the UN nor by the Lebanese state. And they've really kind of made an art out of staying out on under the radar, as Rabia called it, and actually played this game much better than authorities. At some point, they would say, well, you know, if you want to evict us, then we would need a court warrant. But since we don't officially have an address, you can't send us a warrant or an invitation to come to court. So we can't be evicted. So just to give a concrete example of how refugees are by no means sort of agency-less victims in that.
Do you have examples of that as well, Rabia?
Yeah, sure. But also, I want to pick on also on Noora's point, which is marginalization. Since the book is about the governance of refugees, it's all about politics. So we need, and politics is about values. So the values that have been emphasized in the Taif Accord and that have been heavily celebrated by the West for the past, like, 20 or 30 years is a system or a regime of favoritism, exceptionalism, sectarianism, racism. So this is what's governing the Lebanese politics. Now we're talking about newcomers. So what will happen, what will govern the newcomers, the most vulnerable now, is also further marginalization. The no policy, it didn't come out based on a smart strategic decision. It came out simply because you didn't have a strong governance system that can take such a bold decision of having a camps or no camps. So let's say there was a decision to open up camps. Who will build the infrastructure? Where should you place them? So the no policy for Syrian refugees came as part of the incompetence and the hollowing of the state institution that suddenly collapsed 2 years ago. So that all, that what adds to the ordeal of the newcomers, of the new marginalized community in Lebanon.
And you already go ahead.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. No, I just wanted to second that. And I think, yeah, this is also what I've heard from Lebanese friends or interlocutors. They say, well, it's very nice of you to constantly focus on these Palestinians and Syrians, but really, this is our life, too. We also don't have rights. We also don't have any form of predictable public structure that we can turn to. So as an outsider, it looks like this has been changing a little bit since 2019 and also since the Beirut blast. People are pushing back against this a bit more, and this idea of sort of blaming refugees for everything, particularly with the 2019 revolution and in the response to the Beirut blast. But I'm curious to hear if you see that too, Rabia, or if this is just wishful thinking.
Sure, I think there was a lot of hope following the all the agency that happened since 2019 and following this momentum towards change following the Beirut blast. But again, unfortunately, this is linked to parochial, local, sectarian politics, which is empowered by regional venomous rivalry and also supported by international consensus that we need to keep Lebanon as such. This is my personal assessment. Like now the refugees, the numbers of refugees is enormous. We're not talking about tens of thousands. We're talking about millions. So if you open the doors for we've almost lost, I think more than 40% of Lebanese experts have left the country just in the past year or so. So imagine what will happen if you give an opportunity for the Lebanese, for the Palestinians, for the Syrians to leave this geography. And their easy way out is towards Europe. So if these issues are not properly dealt with within the Levant, then Europe should be expecting more millions coming, knocking on their doors very soon.
And you mentioned this, sorry, Rabia, you mentioned the role of the international community that is keeping this as it is, basically. What can our listeners, policymakers, people working at NGOs, what can they do in this situation? What is their role to play to actually improve it?
I think there are two messages. One, which is very practical, that can maybe better, or what I say, build the resilience of refugees on when they're doing their humanitarian or relief work. What rights do they have? The traumatic experiences that they are undergoing, and the polarization that they are subjected to. So if we're able to tweak, to recalibrate some of these three key factors that add to the fragmentation of resilience, that would be extremely impactful for refugees. And that is my message to the international donors and the NGOs that are working in Lebanon. More on the political arena, the international community, they need to understand what values do they want for Lebanon. Do they really want to celebrate more and more our sectarian system as a model for the region? Because that have shown that it's a major failure, and it's a recipe for bloodshed. And this bloodshed has lately been the reason of having millions of refugees evicting their countries into the neighboring countries, and then it's a stepping stone towards going towards Europe. So I think since you have your audience are Europeans, I think they need to ask their policymakers, what is the value system that they are aspiring for a country like Lebanon?
I would even say that they need to go a step further, right? They would also need to ask, what's our value system? This idea, right, that I'm saying Lebanon is governing refugee communities through deliberate non-policy, deliberate strategic ambiguity, that's not just Lebanon. That's not just fragile states. That's not just the global south. That's exactly the way that European refugee policies and work. They're also characterized by vague mandates that can be interpreted every way you want. They're also characterized by sort of gratuitous arrangements. We have the hotspot system, right? Where many researchers have shown that there's actually also systematic non-recording and very arbitrary categorization. We have the deals, the infamous Turkey deal that's seen as a big success. That's also has no legal status. There's talk of leaving the refugee convention in the Netherlands and in other European countries. There's the overall irregularization and criminalization of refugees that try to enjoy a legal right to seek asylum that we're actively trying to obstruct. So, yeah, I think that is really important to also realize, not just think about, you know, what are the values that we want for the region, but what's actually the politics behind this transnational refugee regime.
So definitely also look at your own values and norms on this topic is very important. If there's one thing that you'd like people to take away from your research, one thing that really has to be done with your conclusions, what would that be?
One thing. Wow. I can think of 20 things. Then I think it's mostly that new perspective. I think it's really important to not just focus on what political decision makers are doing, but also on what they're not doing and what the effects of that are and how we can hold them accountable on that. And in broader sense, this is more politically, there's this notion of necropolitics, right? The politics of letting people die. It's different than killing people, but the effects can be the same. So if we can broaden our scope on how to think of political responsibility for human rights, for human lives, that's maybe not super practical, but I think it is a first step towards thinking about then what to do about things.
Is there a last step that you'd like to add as well, Rabia, or before we round up?
Yeah, sure. Again, there are two points. When it comes to refugees, my main maybe advice for for international agencies working in the humanitarian field for Syrian refugees is to build their programs under the reinforcement of resilience, reinforcing the resilience of refugees. And by this, I mean that allowing them to maneuver in a very complex landscape, which in a protracted crisis like Lebanon. For us as Lebanese or policymakers, it is imperative that we move our system evolves from a tribal sectarian system more into a system that celebrates citizenship. So citizenship, it is not a value that we practice, neither in Lebanon, I would say neither in any other country in the Levant. And as long as sectarianism and tribalism rules, you will have to expect another exodus of refugees very soon.
Well, that's some very difficult but very important homework you're giving our listeners. Thank you so much for being here and opening up for this conversation. And good luck with the great work. And for the listeners, thank you for contemplating with us together. Stay alert for those fragile truths out there, and we'll see each other in the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christian. Thank you, Nora.